What's up, y'all? Welcome to the Sports Medicine Broadcast, USA Rugby's Athletic Trainer Rule. This week, our guest is Charlie Wund of Injure Free. I am their host, Jeremy Jackson, and then my students will be here in just a minute. This conversation is going to be sportsmedicinebroadcast.com/USA Rugby. Again, sportsmedicinebroadcast.com/USA Rugby. All right, so Charlie, real quick, we were just discussing your background. You are not an athletic trainer, correct?
Correct.
All right, so you're the CEO of Injure Free, and that's a injury tracking software. All right, so how does Injure Free CEO and USA Rugby having athletic trainers, how are they connected?
Yeah. What we've seen here in the past in kind of the landscape is that a lot of the national governing bodies are creating some type of recommendations or rule changes and policies that affect each state level organizations or administrations, how they operate their particular tournaments, games, leagues, programs. And we've been working with a number of the state level SROs, state rugby organizations that fall under that USA Rugby umbrella. So just one tier down in the administration. And so through that process, a number of those SROs and their executive directors have begun the process of collecting information for injury rates that are occurring in the sport of rugby as a way to help promote its growth. Currently, right now, rugby is the fastest growing sport in the country, as well as the documentation and proper documentation in accordance with their state concussion laws as to return to play protocols and suspected head injuries. The key linchpin there is having that medical provider who's able to accurately document information that's being used at a national level to drive a sport's adoption, as well as the proper evaluations for suspected head injuries, removal of play, and then in many cases also the clean bill of health, the return to play clearance. So athletic trainers are a key component in our injury reporting software system. They're typically the organization, the group, or the party that's doing a lot of the documentation in our system and communication.
Okay, so tell me just a little bit more about what that looks like. If I'm just thinking USA Rugby, I don't know if those teams or those when I work a tournament, it's that I show up at that tournament and I do whatever I normally do to take care of those athletes at that time, but my contact with them before and after that tournament is absent.
Right? Yeah.
And so if they're wanting to track injuries, just talk a little bit more about that process.
Yeah, absolutely. So one of the key functionalities when we were designing Injure Free was really understanding what the ecosystem was, especially for athletic trainers or that on-field care provider. And often that scenario that you're describing, especially in the youth sports world, exists all too often. I've got a per diem situation, or I'm an athletic trainer at a high school. I'm working on some tournaments on the weekend. I have no clue who these teams are. I have no clue who the coaches are. I have no personal relationship with the kids and the athletes. So walking into those scenarios, sometimes it's an uphill battle. And what we realize is that there are certain scenarios like that where the care providers or the care team is going to be fragmented. So we wanted a way to be able to have some sort of backlog or an existing kind of trend or access to an injury report for an organization. And so the way we design the system is all role-based. And when an athletic trainer in that scenario is assigned coverage for a particular organization, they then have access to all of the injury reports for that group that have previously been documented, often by other athletic trainers. We also see scenarios in high schools where maybe there's six high schools in a district and there's only four athletic trainers. And so that they will often rotate per site locations. So the same story there, you know, going into an environment, what happened on the shift before I got there, or what has been documented within this population set, what am I walking into? And so the way our system is designed, it allows that type of access for individuals. And then after they've been removed from the organization and their authorization for viewing, they don't have access to that population anymore. So it's kind of a, as they come in, I'm on site, I need to be able to document, but they're able to look at that information previously walking in as well.
All right, so this group, or I say the coach, again, we're talking about USA Rugby, so that coach has to make sure that all their kids' information is already pre-input so that the athletic trainer can easily go in and click, you know, Johnny, whatever, and then he can, the athletic trainer can go and say, all right, well, Johnny's recovering from a concussion. We know that he's on this step. He's not allowed to play. Or, yeah, this is just an ankle sprain, and that's play as tolerated, that kind of thing.
Yeah, absolutely. So a lot of the rollout and setup processes, we actually help those organizations with uploading rosters, assigning coaches or athletic trainers to the system itself, and getting them to the point where there is some type of standardized identification process. Often it's first name, last name. It is also, they use USA Rugby's, they call them SIP codes, C-I-P-P, which is their unique identifier within the sport of rugby. So we're able to then enter that information for individuals. So even if that child is trying to leave and go play in a tournament someplace else, that number is going to follow them. And in the system, we can track everywhere they go. Any child who is suspected of having an injury that's not going to allow them to participate, often concussions, that child's name is going to be in red in the system. So just at a glance, I'm going to know who is and who's not. And then there's a third level of kind of integration that we work with, where we do connect with a lot of the registration systems that are being used by the state rugby organizations. And all of that happens seamlessly, the way technology should work. When a child is removed from play by an athletic trainer from their mobile device, in the registration system, that player is also then removed from the roster of eligible players. Before every rugby match, that roster needs to be turned into the officials and then verified. That child's name doesn't even show up on that list. So they're not cleared to participate, and the official won't have their name available for participation through those types of integrations. So there's a lot of that type of technology on the back end that we continue to implement that helps with the workflow and really the administrative burden when you're walking into these tournament situations, but even in a normal seasonal component as well. You know, these types of things help provide athletic trainers more time, more hands-on time with kids doing the job.
Okay, so let's go over the timeline a little bit. When did you guys start injury-free? When was the USA Rugby rule made? When did you guys get involved? And then we'll get into some of the data that you've collected since you've been involved.
Yeah, sure, absolutely. So in 2010, we founded the Agency for Student Health Research, which is the corporation that we run now, where injury-free is one of our products there. In about 2011, 2012, before injury-free even existed, we were doing some work with our local California Interscholastic Federation, the section tournament, or excuse me, the section administrators here in California, in Southern California. And we were looking at the rates of injuries that were occurring during football playoffs as opposed to the regular season in that particular year. Through that process, there was a lot of one-on-one conversations, a lot of hands-on injury tracking, if you will, of just collecting information and data. But we were also able to speak with athletic trainers, coaches, administrators, people who are responsible in this ecosystem for the care of the kids, and really learn where all those pain points were. Between 2012 and 2000, I would say 14, 15, is when we built InjureFree. We had some minimum products. We had apps that we had at the time that were being used, but it was still a learning from everyone who was out there front lines, what was needed, what is needed, what are the best ways to develop that product. And so over that period of time is really where about end of 2014, 2015 is when we began to launch our system on nationally, internationally through some different populations and see some significant data flow that was being used by other organizations. In 2000, and I have to go back now, we're in 17, so that's going to say 2015 or so is when we launched with our first SRO, Southern California Youth Rugby Association. And they were extremely progressive. Their executive director, Alexandra Williams, put together what they call a player welfare program that indicates they're not allowed to participate at certain levels within their organization without having an athletic trainer on the field. And even more so, they went ahead and they fundraised to place those athletic trainers. They work with a per diem, a placement organization called AT Vantage, or Advantage, who helps them coordinate and schedule and find the athletic trainers and put them onto the fields. And so that really set the trend. Now we see the other SROs coming on board following that trend. And right now, currently, we have over half of the youth rugby population in the country being tracked within the injury-free system.
All right, so I'm just trying to keep up on the notes there. You got currently over half of the youth rugby population in the system?
Correct, yeah, and that's national? Nationally. Yes.
Wow. All right, so you guys were tracking injuries, kind of pen and paper, 2010-ish, 2012, and you were building injury-free. And what kind of injuries were you guys seeing, or trends were you seeing with the injury tracking software?
Yeah, so, you know, what was really exciting about the process is that it wasn't unique necessarily on a national level. Certainly by sport, we could see trends, and most of it was driven by concussions. You know, in 2009, the Zach Leidstedt law that started in Washington State swept the country to 2012, and now all 50 states have that policy. So lots of organizations were struggling with that regulatory compliance. They wanted to have some level of documentation specifically for concussions. And then if you were going to be documenting concussions, why not have all injuries also documented? Typically, when we started off, it was mainly just the high school athletes. But then as the use of the system grew, as our integrations and capabilities continue to change, we now have schools that are K-12 documenting all illness and injuries as their student reporting system. So it's interesting to see how the product itself has evolved and how its use case has also evolved. And in that, we're seeing then more robust data. We allow for custom questions to be inputted and so that there is unique data sets about field locations. We see ER visits. We see specifically where they're going for specialty care through referrals. All real exciting information that has a different type of impact depending on where that population is. One of the biggest things for us that I think really separated the use of data in this youth athletic epidemiological sense is it is specific to a particular population. So the beauty of that collection process is that nationally, and let's say we take youth rugby, for example, we're able to make some strong correlations on a high level, on a trend level, but then also regionally, what's going on in the state of Indiana, what's going on a particular club in northern Indiana versus southern Indiana, or girls versus boys, or, you know, age groups. And so we can drill down into that information. We can track trends that are occurring on the 8-year-old, you know, youth rugby club in, you know, like I said, the state of Indiana, for example. Or we can look at, you know, the number of ankle sprains that are occurring on the JV girls field hockey team in a school district in California. So that's what makes it impactful, I think, is that, you know, those trends will vary depending on the organizations, their policies, if or not they have an athletic trainer. Maybe the field conditions, but it becomes meaningful to them because it is their data. It's not a national reporting system that says, here's what we see for the trends in ankle sprains in field hockey. It really is very specific. A lot of the schools and organizations we work with do a great job of concussion management, and they don't have an issue. There is going to be injuries that are going to occur, but the way they handle them, the timeliness of their reporting, the communication with an athletic trainer on site to have those evaluations, and then the referral process in and out with a health system, you know, is phenomenal. But maybe there's some other types of injuries there that they can prevent, like warm-up routines, like hamstring pulls, where maybe that athletic trainer is only there for game coverage and the coaches, you know, aren't putting together the right type of dynamic warm-up routines. Without that oversight. So it's interesting to see the different types of information that comes in from the different types of organizations. But ultimately, that data being meaningful to them, I think, is the most important piece to that.
All right. So going back to the USA Rugby, what do you think was the most important information to them? I mean, obviously you said there was a lot of concussion-driven information, but what were the things that they really looked at and said, hey, we need athletic trainers?
Yeah. You know, I think the biggest concern on this is that when you walk onto a field and if you've got kids who are playing sports, you want to sense that they're in the safest possible environment. And so there are influences, I believe, that you can't see the rules, the policies that go on. But then there are things that you can. And knowing and identifying who that athletic trainer is, who's the on-care specialist, if something is going to happen, how are they going to react? What are those, you know, protocols that are put into place? I think that's the sense of security that they're looking for, especially in an emerging sport like rugby. You know, whenever we talk about it, everyone always says, gosh, rugby, that's got to be, you know, much more dangerous, and there's got to be a ton more injuries than there is in football. And so immediately they're trying to think about how can we create that safe playing environment. And of course, having an athletic trainer is one of the best ways to do that. So I think that that's what, you know, pushes them towards driving those types of policies in place and providing those resources. Ultimately, head injuries are big concerns. But when we talk about maintenance of rugby athletes, lots of contusions, lots of bruises. Just, you know, being in that impact sport, hitting the ground, all that roll tackling. And so taking care of on a maintenance component, those kids, giving them the guidance on how do I take care of a bruise and to keep it from moving into that deep thigh issue, and, you know, really calcifying and all those types of things. How do I take care of a bruise? So it's an educational component that I think also goes into the maintenance of rugby players, where athletic trainers provide a high level of value. Of course, the documentation of head injuries, right? I mean, that's got to be one of the highest, number one reasons why we've got athletic trainers out there, is making sure these kids aren't going back to play. They're being removed from play, things like that.
Okay, so my wife actually asked me that question last night. Oh, rugby, there's probably a lot more injuries than football, right? So you've got very specific data. Do you have an answer to that question?
Yeah, we've got a couple of interesting things that are developing. So again, right now, we're early in our deployment so that we don't have enough historical data on a national level to really make any strong correlations. But what we have been able to see in some of the most recent reports based off of exposures, it's almost a 12-to-1 differential, meaning football has 12 injuries to every one rugby injury. The amount of play that goes on, the consistent nature of rugby with a running clock and no stoppage, skews that scale tremendously compared to a 60-minute football game that really only has about 12 minutes of actual competition, where the players are, you know, going in, there's risk for injury. So that number and that change is really where everyone's focused right now, in understanding the number of injuries that are occurring and how that can be skewed one way or the other. There's an old saying that we use around here, that Mark Twain quote, that says there's liars, there's damn dirty liars, and then there's statisticians. And that's not a knock on anybody who's a statistician or an epidemiologist, but more about how you present information in a certain way can be skewed to make a point or to avoid a point, depending on how you use it. So we always keep that in the back of our heads as a methodology component of making sure that we are agnostic as possible in the transfer of information, and allowing organizations to do their own deep dives into what are the rates, what are the numbers we want to look at. But like, as I mentioned, you know, contusions, lots of bruises. Second on that list is probably head injuries, suspected concussions, versus maybe a diagnosed component that drops by about 2/3. After that, it drops again significantly into lots of hands. We see dislocations. We do see fractures. But your typical, I would say almost a wrestling environment, where you, those types of injuries that you're seeing.
All right. So you mentioned Alicia over at the AT Advantage, and they're a big part of partnering with you guys and USA Rugby and providing athletic trainers. And how has athletic training in your region, your area, changed because of this rule with USA Rugby?
Well, I'll tell you what, the demand is increasing more and more. There are so many organizations now that are having a hard time finding athletic trainers. I think that that's a huge piece, which ultimately leads to the value that's being provided. What I think is, you know, good for the profession is that the hourly rate we see now is continually going up and up and up, which is tremendous for anyone who's looking at entering the profession, being in and around sports, and just helping out in this medical care community. I think that now it's actually a viable opportunity. In the past, we've seen athletic trainer salaries, you know, in the $25,000 annually at a high school. Now there's minimums being drawn on the line. Alicia has done a tremendous job of driving that value. She drew a line in the sand and said, this is what our athletic trainers get paid, take it or leave it. And because of the demand issue, they have to pay it. So I think that that's tremendous for the profession. I think that she's someone who's also a leader in the space, setting those lines, setting those parameters. But at the same time, you know, the value then, everybody's mind is shifting. A couple of years ago, I can't remember what year specifically, but I remember, I think it was Rob Gronkowski was one of his ACL tears. And one of the reporters was asking Bill Belichick, you know, when's he cleared to play? Is he good to go? And he said, that's up to the athletic trainers and the doctors. I coach football. They take care of them medically. And I think that type of mentality now has started to find itself into the youth market, where coaches don't want anything to do with it. They, you know, they understand their role, but they're now being put into place about when a child is cleared to play. And that certainly wasn't the case when I was, you know, playing sports and growing up, right? I mean, it was, you're out there, get out there. And the athletic trainer was just hoping that, you know, they could tape you up together and not fall apart right in front of you, just long enough for the game to get through. Nowadays, it is, there are protocols in place. There's a lot more weight that comes with an athletic trainer's voice. Many of the people who, unfortunately, we label as progressive, understand the importance of having an athletic trainer. And so that they are putting them in that high regards and, you know, it's giving them the tools they need to be able to do their job effectively. I think on the negative side, we're still seeing volume issues. One athletic trainer to take care of 1,000 high school athletes at a particular school. It's just one of those unnecessary situations and unfortunate that the schools and the districts don't understand there's a ratio that goes on here. And if you're going to get the higher level care, you need a better ratio. And so there are things that I think we need to change, but we're certainly seeing more weight, if you will. I keep using that term, but more importance placed on the profession, and more people in the ecosystem, I think, are valuing athletic trainers at a higher level these days.
Yeah, I mean, statements like you said, Bill Belichick's, you know, I'm gonna leave the medical decision up to the medical professional, and I'm gonna do the coaching, and that's great because it says, hey, I respect them, I respect what they do, they're important, they're an important part of the team. And then, like you said, Alicia, she's been doing great job out there, and I've talked to her before on the podcast a couple of different times personally, just about what she's doing, and it's really cool just to see how she is championing. I don't know, whatever, however you say that, athletic training and the salary increase and everything there in California as they're struggling with some of their own athletic training issues. So
yeah,
talk about how rugby itself has been affected by the requirement. Have you seen many matches get canceled, moved, or anything like that because of an athletic trainer not being available?
You know, I think on a higher level, what we're talking about here is protocols. Whenever you're trying to institute a new rule or policy and you're changing human behavior, essentially, there's always going to be a curve of adoption. And we see these types of trends on the rule side with the athletic trainers, but also just in the injury reporting, too. And so there's a number of different stances. It really comes down from the leadership. It's top down. So, you know, when we first started seeing the athletic trainer mandate come out, games were, you know, coaches were trying to shift locations 1 or 2 days before that game and just causing a nightmare in scheduling, because now I don't need that athletic trainer down in San Diego. I need him up in Orange County, but I've got 48 hours to find someone to do that. Right. And so I think that the understanding the leadership top-down mentality when you roll out these new changes is setting an expectation of what you is going to happen and then designing a system that forces compliance. We work with a youth football group up in the Portland area, and their administrator made the rule and said, listen, every week you're going to have to report something. It's either the injuries that are going in that you're seeing, or it's going to be the nothing to report, an NTR, and a zero. And so after 1 year, you know, lots of grumblings. But he said, listen, your game's forfeited. If we don't get anything coming in from you, you're going to forfeit your game. And now there's pressure from the players and the parents just to do your job. Again, unfortunately, that's kind of where we are right now, is that there are pockets of people who still don't see it necessary to go through these components, or, you know, procrastinating to the last minute to make these types of changes instead of having some forethought and planning ahead and getting, making sure that your site location, your athletic trainer, your emergency action plan, your med kit, right, all that's in order. So it's a change in culture, but we do see these types of things occur. And, you know, taking that football group that we work with now, at the end of the year, you can see the coaches who had zeros the entire season. And you're saying, coach, you just played, you know, 3 months of football. You're telling me you didn't have one injury at all the entire season? And it's clear the people who are just not doing what they should be doing. And then the question is, do you want those people in your organization? Fortunately, you know, most of the volunteer coaches and the people that are working in this space recognize that they're going to be asked to do a little bit more now. And they're in it for the right reasons, to provide strong playing environments for kids, and they want to be out there helping them. So they'll do what's required of them. They just need as much help as we can give them in that regard, and giving them the direction. They don't necessarily want to make the decisions, but we just need to make that workflow or that those protocols as easy as they can to comply. And then, like I said, most people in that space are going to be proactive and do the right thing.
All right. So here at Pasadena, we use Rank One Sport for our injury tracking stuff. And and we have something similar where it's red if the athlete is not clear, either due to injury or the physical not being turned in. And then so the coaches are supposed to have that kid on their roster. And then they don't actually do any sort of injury reporting. They just check that to see if their kid is clear. And so because we have athletic trainers here at the school, we are the ones that deal with any sort of injury input or treatment log and that kind of stuff. But we're just now rolling out our middle schools being part of Rank One so that they can check on and make sure their physicals are turned in properly and the documentation is done. And also it allows the paperwork to follow the kid from intermediate to high school. So for 6 years, we have, you know, medical information on that kid. And so that's the process that we're currently in. And I'm not sure that I want coaches documenting injuries, but it's the best you can do at that situation, right? If you don't have an athletic trainer there, then you have to have somebody documenting it.
Yeah. And I think that, you know, what do we ask those coaches to actually do? Again, it's, you know, so this goes back to some of our design too. We looked at that workflow. What is the student accident reporting procedure? And at some point, the insurance company said, listen, if a kid falls down on the playground, we need this document filled out just to make sure that there's a claim. We have all proper documentation and people are going about their business the right way. But that doesn't mean that we want coaches out there classifying concussions, right? We don't want them saying, yeah, that was definitely a concussion. Those are the medical decisions that we want to leave up to. So the way we've approached it is that we allow all of that basic information that would be filled out by a layperson during the reporting process to be entered by anyone who's authorized within a school or district. So a staff member, a medical staff member then can take that report, be notified that the report was created, and then go back in after a post-evaluation and actually classify that injury. So they're not going to have to fill out the child's name, the date, what took place. That's all being done by the person who's the on-site caregiver, like you're saying, the coach who's responsible for them at that moment. Later, when they go get their medical evaluation, that's when we allow the medical users to come in and supplement the information. And then ongoingly through the recovery process, changing those status updates, updating the red, the blacks, you know, when are they clear to participate, or if that note's coming in from the doctor, giving them that type of control. So there's a way to, I think, manipulate that situation where, again, you're saying, listen, we want proper documentation. We want enhanced communication. But based off of someone's role or position, what are they actually authorized to enter or to classify or diagnose in that case? But certainly we know, I mean, I'm a former football coach. I probably put in my fair share of dislocated fingers and whatnot at the time, but doesn't mean I should have been doing that, right? It's just you do what you can, and if you have an athletic trainer around, terrific. But sometimes you have got to step up and be the person with that first aid experience at least to handle it. So fortunately, that was about the extent of my medical career.
All right, so if somebody is using Rank One and has stats, is using Injure Free or Dragonfly Max or one of the other athletic injury tracking softwares, what are some of the ways that we as athletic trainers can use the data or the information we're gathering to help improve our position, as USA Rugby did? They saw those trends and said, look, we need athletic trainers. We need this. What are some of the ways that we can do that?
Yeah, that's so lots of great questions there. You know, we live in a data-driven world, end of story. Everything that we look at now on the corporate, on the marketing side of things is fueled by data. And we heard this term about 4 or 5 years ago, big data, big data, big data. What we've learned through that process is that it's not just the amount of information, it's the quality of information, and it's how it's being applied that really make it useful. And so in this particular case right now, the quality of information that any athletic trainer is collecting on their own, we've seen a number of use case scenarios. So right off the bat, I know every athletic trainer out there, if they're not using a software system, they've got a clipboard and they're tracking ice bags and ankle tapes, right? And that really is helping to prove to the administration, you know, what their day-to-day consists of, the volume that's going on. Sometimes that's inventory, but it often is about the job and the position, unfortunately, that they have to go and they have to document. One of the other things that you can do and that we do through the Injury Free system is assign some of the CPT or ICD-10 codes that go into that for the medical billing. And if you're looking at not necessarily the ice bags or the ankle tape being taped, but some of the care that's being provided in a preventative or in a rehab sense actually has a dollar amount on it. And so a couple of years ago, we worked with one athletic trainer who spent time 2 years at two different schools. And in documenting the log of injuries, the injury reports that she put in, and the services associated with that, we were able to calculate using those CPT codes a value of about $55,000 that she saved in medical care expenses by providing that care and treatment on site. And that's valuable. That's valuable to a school district who pays insurance rates. That's valuable to the parents who would be paying out of pocket at least $35 copay. These are all services that they're going to have to get someplace else that's being taken care of by that salaried position, hopefully salaried position. And so in those cases there's actually a monetary value that can be provided. The other side of that is that, you know, we've been successful in partnering school districts and youth sports organizations with hospitals and health systems. And very much athletic trainers are an extension of those healthcare systems. And so the value that they're bringing to a larger entity like a hospital is in new patient acquisitions. So how can we use that data and how can we use that information? It can be a link then to capture that healthcare system and say, we've got a new medical sponsor. Often we see healthcare systems underwrite costs for athletic trainers at the healthcare system side or do them at cost or at a reduced rate, offering supplies. But providing a more substantial kind of benefit package and salary package for an athletic trainer as opposed to what a school district might be able to offer. So just giving them and strengthening their position, acquiring higher level talent, those types of things can be done when you tap into those larger dollars. And so using, again, those same metrics, here's the number of referrals or here's the number of outpatient care that we needed to send into a healthcare system. And tracking those values state by state is a great way to do that. I think that, you know, altruistically, though, athletic trainers keeping tabs of this information and identifying trends really allows them to tap into their full education potential and say, you know, we've got more that it's more than just a reactive nature in our position. We're also very proactive in the prehab type of a sense. And we've seen situations where athletic trainers are taking the data that's collected in the systems and suggesting to coaches, coach, we need to change your warm-up routine, right? I've got too many quad and hamstring pulls coming to see me, and it's because you're static stretching, you know, for 15 minutes before practice starts. Let's get these people on a workout routine twice or three times a week. Let's get them in some dynamic warm-up movement exercises that can really drive the performance of the team, but also the health and safety. So I think that that's another way where when you have access to trends like that and you have the ability to aggregate that information, it's on the value, the economic side of a position, but it's also then allowing them to do more with their job and their position, being hands-on, being proactive, and really strengthening the relationship amongst the coaches in the community as well.
At the beginning, you mentioned the sample size and the football injuries, 12-1, that kind of thing. What is a good sample size? Bill and I have been collecting our hours for about 3 years. We've been tracking injuries using this, using the Google Docs, like the treatment logs, using Google Docs for a year and a half. We've been doing using Rank One for, 3 to 5 years here. And so we have a good bit of injury reports and treatment logs and hours. What do you think is a really good sample size for using that data to improve your situation?
You know, the easy answer there is whatever sample size you're working with. There's two components to the data. One is going to be in a real-time sense or in a current year or a month or season, whatever it might be. And then it's going to be a historical as well. So it's going to have value in two different ways. The most, going back to what we were saying before too, the most impactful data is going to be one that's actionable. You know, who cares what the national rate of concussion is, really? I mean, we know that every population we work with is going to be different. There's going to be different rules. There's going to be different athletes. There's going to be different, on-site medical care. And so there's going to be all these different factors that are going to play into the rate of injuries that's occurring, that it's going to be really difficult to take a number like that on a national level and make it meaningful to someone in your position at a high school. So having the data size, the set that you work with now, be that population of high school student athletes in your school that's the most meaningful population, because now in your set, you know what those trends are. You're looking at your historically, I can see that, you know what, in fall, we see a ton of concussions. We see a ton of hamstring pulls, lots of soft tissue injuries, because not many of these kids are doing any summer training. They're coming off the couch. They're walking right out onto their varsity sports. And many of the coaches, what's the first thing they do? Tryouts. So these kids are going to go from 0 to 100 in the first 3 days of practice because they want that job. They want that position. And that's when we're going to see all those tears, those soft tissue injuries, those ligaments, where, you know, they're just not ready, prepared for that. So you can use that information, again, in your own population set, whatever size that is, 100 kids, 3,000 kids, 5,000 kids. And you can say, coaches, look, here's what historically the trends are. And we've had athletic trainers. We got a great story here. We had one high school here in California tracking all their injuries. And in the first 3 weeks of football practice, there were 8 concussions. So if they kept on that same pace for the 12-week season or about 15-week season, it would have ended up being something like 35% of the team would have been concussed by the end of the year, right? And so immediately, in a real-time sense, on a population of 150 kids playing football at that school, we were able to identify the cause and communicate through the athletic trainer what the change was that needed to happen. And then from there on out, they only had 3 concussions for the rest of the season. They looked at that information, and that ended up that year they actually won the state championship. And so in doing that, it directly correlated to a performance because those kids weren't in concussion protocols. They weren't on the sidelines. They were out there being able to participate and play, which ultimately helps the coaches. The following year, they got knocked out in the first round, and they could see they had concussions sprinkled throughout the entire season that impacted their starters and their ability to continue to play in those key games. So it's meaningful to the people who can use it and can apply it to those population sets. So, you know, again, if you're in a school, if you're working with an organization, that's the meaningful size right there. That's the impact that it can have.
So I don't have to wait for a year or 2 years or 3 years to pass before I take what I have and do something with it. So just taking what I already have, doing something with it, and then as I add more, adjust.
One of the biggest problems with the research cycle now is that it takes 5 years. So to get an IRB approval, to launch a study, to have controls, to analyze that data, to aggregate that data, and to publish a research paper can take 5 years. So what we've done is we've said, okay, we're going to collect information on these kids for, say, 2-3 years, right? And then by the time that we get the actual findings published and put out there and scientifically peer-reviewed, those kids are already in college. So we studied a population that's not even in playing anymore, right? So now it's a whole new set of variables. So it's almost worthless in that sense. That's why actionable data, I think, is much more impactful. If you see something that's happening right now, if you see a trend that's happening over a 3-week period, over a 2-week period, you know, start to focus the questions around what is really going on here, eliminating variables, understanding what might be occurring, and then make those changes. I don't think there's any reason why we need to wait, especially when we're talking about the health and safety of kids.
All right, there you go. There's your action step. Just use what you got. All right, Charlie. Take a minute. Tell me about InjureFree. What makes it unique?
Yeah, so there's two things that really stand out about our system. First, we built the system to be a workflow solution, meaning it's going to help reduce the amount of time someone who uses any types of software is going to have to put into the management. We divvy up the responsibilities. We connect that HIPAA-compliant ecosystem and communication sense so that we're really driving connectivity and transparency, not putting that burden on one person like an athletic trainer. You know, everyone's got a role and they're all being notified in real time and access that information. We also have content education delivery through it, so we can satisfy any of those state laws about who needs to sign what piece of paper, who needs to watch what video, what training for concussions or any other type of illness or injury prevention training. And we're also documenting those real-time alerts and recovery procedures in the concussion protocols. We have a couple of other key functionalities of the system that connect to not just then the athletic department, but the entire school and the school district, which are unique. Someone can enter an injury report on the field during field hockey practice, and in real time, the risk manager at the district office is going to get one of the student accident forms that's required for those types of incidences. So, you know, authorized signatures, date and time stamping, the whole nine, which again is a workflow solution connecting this fragmented ecosystem, but then allowing everybody to do their job more efficiently. And we continue to drive our development as a software around those functions, around those key nuances. Is it going to be something that all of our clients are going to be able to use? Is it going to be something that's going to make everybody's jobs easier? And that's our goal. I think our UX, our UI front end of the interface that you're actually using is extremely simplistic. It's mobile and responsive. Doesn't matter what hardware device you're using. Doesn't matter what size screen. You're going to have full functionality of the system no matter where you are, because we know that it's a very mobile world that we live in. So from a product standpoint, we've heard that it's one of the best out there. We have new clients come on all the time and say, gosh, I was using something else and this is so much easier to use. We love it. Things like that. The really the biggest differentiator of us and our company and our team is the understanding and the industry know-how that we have on deployment. All too often, the technology worlds hang their hat on this software as a service piece and component, meaning all you have to do is plug and play. You can log in today, sign up with your credit card, and then you're off and running, and you can do whatever you want to do with the system. Here's how you use it. We take great pride in actually understanding the ecosystem that we're going to be deploying our solution into and then providing individual trainings for all those key stakeholders and caregivers, customizing the questions, doing the roster uploads. But again, going back to that Bill Belichick model, you know, often these athletic trainers or, you know, school administrators, they're not experts in deploying injury tracking software or any type of system software like this through large populations. We are. That's what we pride ourselves on, is understanding and holding the hands, developing protocols. I can't tell you how many times we come into an organization and they don't have any protocols on what's a reportable injury. Is it time loss? Is it when supplies are used? Is it every, you know, nick and cut? You know, what are we reporting into a system? What is the protocol? Nine times out of 10, organizations don't have that simple step acknowledged, but they're deploying injury tracking software. So those are the types of things that we roll out. We put them on a timeline and again, make sure everybody understands what those roles and responsibilities are. So I think that's a key differentiator. We always say we're a service behind the software.
Fair enough. Somebody wants to find out more, take a look at your product. Where are they going to do that?
InjureFree.com is our website. You're happy to hop on there. You can, there's a button there to request a demonstration so we can give live one-on-one personalized demos of the system, walk through, answer those questions, begin to understand the ecosystems that you're working on. There are some training videos that we have on YouTube which is also just injury-free channel there on YouTube. A lot of those are getting updated right now as we speak. We've just launched version 3.0 with a new mobile responsive nature to it. And so we're redoing some of those key components, but a lot of the key functionalities there on how it works, and they're just 1 minute, 2 minute clips of those little, of those pieces. So those are two great sources of information and ways to find out about the product itself.
All right. So check out injurefree.com. And Charlie, if somebody wants to get a hold of you.
I'm always mobile, so my cell phone's always the best number to get me on. But at the same time, I'm on LinkedIn. It's a great way to connect. I've got a lot of professional networks there. I also have some Twitter accounts, and so I'm on there sometimes. Most of the time, though, LinkedIn's a great way to reach out.
All right, and then are you just Charlie Wund on LinkedIn?
Yep, that's me, and at Charlie Wund on Twitter.
All right, I'm not an expert LinkedIn user. I mean, I have an account, but I don't really ever use it. And so, I mean, on Twitter, I know how to do that one, but got it.
Yeah. LinkedIn's, it's good. It's, they've changed it recently, but it becomes easier to network, and then also sharing a lot of stories or news and media in that fashion as well. So social media at its finest.
All right. Do you have any specific resources that you would recommend, for athletic trainers? Maybe they're looking at tracking injury software or, data. I know I recommend Alicia's podcast about negotiations. I just listened to her one about networking. I think she does a really tremendous job. But do you have any, maybe even the book Who Moved Your Cheese? I don't know. You got any resources?
Yeah. So there's a couple of folks out there that have similar information. Dustin Fink is a great athletic trainer. He runs the Concussion Blog. He does a great job of talking about resources there as well. We do push towards the NATA. They try to do a great job of creating those resources. And so that's always someone that's out there doing good things. Always the state associations as well. So in California, the California Athletic Trainers Association, we have one, even though that we don't have the sanctioning that all other 49 states do, but we're not going to talk about that here. So those are some of the great, resource links that are out there. Often we try to track our own SEO on how we pop up into people's feeds. And so often we hear Google searches are the great way to do it, is just to get out there to find out what's going on. I would recommend, if you're into athletic injury epidemiology and just youth sports safety in general, there's the whole world in Australia right now and in New Zealand is extremely progressive. Caroline Finch is somebody on Twitter who is an absolute must follow. She's a tremendous resource in the world for somebody who's out there. There's also, we have another partner and a researcher, Evert Verhagen over in Amsterdam, who also does great work with the International Olympic Committee, and some fantastic finds there about what's going globally. I think in the U.S., we always get caught in our own little microcosm on our island here that we forget that there's other people out there doing great stuff. I would also recommend, if you're not familiar with it, you check out the FIFA 11 Plus program, a tremendous example of how data drove injury prevention policy and prevention techniques that are put into place now in soccer associations all over the place. But those are some of the highlights there. I think those are some great resources for people to take a look at.
Sounds good. Sounds good. Yeah. All right. Charlie, any parting thoughts? Any concerns there?
Yeah, no, absolutely. I think thank you so much for the opportunity to come on board. I know a lot of what we talked about today, we're preaching to the choir out there. Sitting in my seat, it's a different lens on the athletic training world. And I can tell you over the past 5 years, we've seen things change noticeably. And I think that all too often athletic trainers have been pushed into a corner, and that can create a sense of a large chip on someone's shoulder over periods of time. And so I think just a little bit of hope, just hang in there. The world's changing. The laws are being written every day. The importance of athletic trainers is up and coming. And so it's a great time to be progressive in that approach and to really stand ground and to share resources like these podcasts. You guys are doing a great job of spreading the word and using technology to your advantage to create a connected community, which is a big piece of it. So thanks again for having me on, and happy to be a resource anytime.
All right. Thank you, sir. Again, this is sportsmedicinebroadcast.com/USA Rugby. And we're talking with Charlie Wund of Injure Free. So they have links to those in the show notes. Check that out. Also, don't forget sportshealth.com/SMB is an opportunity to win a $100 gift card from Sports Health. So buy you something cool, get you a discount off your next backpack or some Band-Aids, something for your school. Or if you're doing contract work like you might be doing with USA Rugby, then it's whatever kit supplies you need in your kit for that tournament. So again, check out sportshealth.com/SMB for the Sports Medicine Broadcast. I am Jeremy Jackson. Charlie, thanks for being here. And that is a wrap.